All right. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. Seems like some people are listening. Thank you. Appreciate it. I'd like some feedback. If it was boring, you can say that too. But if it's an interesting story, I'd appreciate that too. But I think what I've failed to do is kind of touch on Japanese labor prison in the beginning. I could go through this whole story and eventually get to the main story, but I should like probably talk about, you know, the process. Like, it was kind of crazy. Like, it took a long time to go to court for me. And maybe a little tidbit I could give today is how their court system works. If you get arrested, and they send you beyond the jailhouse and you go to the detention type center where essentially you're going to be tried. Like, if they decide they're going to try you, you are done for. You must know that. Like, I should tell you if you have any friends. And that's one thing. If you have any friends that are in the system, I guess I should say that I want to make, you know, I want to kind of make people aware. Like, if you got questions about what's going on, you can like voice message me here, you know, on this app Anchor or whatever, and I can give you some advice and talk about it too, because really it's a trip. But basically, they got six jury members and three judges on one panel, and the jury can ask questions during the process too. And essentially, I had to go through the whole process. It's all in Japanese, but you do get an interpreter. Like, she was interpreting into my ear. I speak, read, and write Japanese, but you don't know lawyer talk. I don't know lawyer talk. I'm not that deep on kanji. I can't read those kanji. I'm not even going to try to read a legal document. Like, you know, yeah, let me get a translator. The U.S. Embassy will visit you and things like that. So that's one thing. Your country doesn't turn their back on you, but there's nothing they can do, really. They will send you magazines from like 8 years ago. It's kind of fucking weird. Some of the stuff they send you is just stuff out of the office that just they don't have sometimes. It's like, and like they have to cut some stuff out of it. So I'm sure it's just to give us something to read, something to look at, something from America. And, you know, it helped. But I guess that's a little tidbit on that. And if anybody has questions, definitely just go ahead and contact me, and I'll try to help you out and tell you about it. Because I know my family didn't have anybody to talk to about what I was going through whenever I was going through it. And then you can't communicate too much. You can't use the phone. I didn't use the phone until I left that place. I left that place, and then I was able to use the phone. Once I was incarcerated, there was no using the phone. It was not happening. All right, back to the story, because recapping from last time, I was in training school. So the reason I told that story is to just kind of let you know that I'd been locked up as a youth. So once I was locked up as an adult, like, it's never good. Like, it never feels good. Like, it's a horrible, it's trauma to the brain. You probably do have PTSD at the end of a long haul, for real. Because you've seen some stuff and your brain was fucked off and you couldn't talk to people or something like that. So you might have some form of PTSD. But when you can't communicate, you can't talk to your mom, you can't just hear her voice or whatever, that shit's crazy. You got to communicate through letter. I don't know. It's nuts. And then it's solitary confinement, I'll tell you that. But I can answer some of those questions. I might be able to help, because my family didn't have anybody help them. And sometimes, you know, it hurts the family just as much as the person being locked up. So it's hard on the whole family. And if a little bit of information could help you guys out, feel free to contact me. This thing's called Japanese Labor Prison Shizuoka. I don't know how to contact people, how they're supposed to contact me through that, but I ain't giving out my personal nothing. So recap training school. So yeah, that way when I mean, so the training school, back to the original point, I told that story so that y'all could know that I had been locked up before. So whenever I did get locked up, my brain had already, I already kind of understood what was going to happen. And basically that one day you will get out, as hard as you, as hard as, and as long as it might seem that they give you. Once you know the number and you can kind of just put a date on it and be like, I'm gonna get out on that date. And then they tell you that you might get out a little bit earlier. That's kind of fucked up because, like, you gotta figure, like, you're sitting there talking. That's all y'all are talking about. I think it just gives you something to talk about because that's all, like, everybody had their different formulas. All these Japanese dudes sitting around, oh, no, you're gonna get out on this day. You're gonna get on this day. I'm gonna get on this day. And then he's wrong. And then I see this other dude get out. And I formulated my own, and I told him when I was getting out there, nah, you ain't getting out on that. And I sure as hell got out on the day I was expecting to get out, because it was just how it happened. Like, it's pretty predictable the way the Japanese people operate, because they've definitely operate as a team, and for the better, for the society, they work together. And so I can't knock the Japanese system for that. But this part of the story, I guess, is memoir dealy dally. We're gonna recap from training school, really. I'm not touching on that really, but we talked about it enough. Biz quitting plumbing. Oh, Ernie. Oh, I guess I was writing this episode out today, or not episode really, but this story. I forgot to tell you whenever Ernie. Like, one last Ernie story. He hit me with a hammer in the head, like a little maul, like a, it's like a little mini sledgehammer. Like, I guess I should tell that story. Ernie did. He hit me in the head. So we were kids, though. We were like 12. Like, we were getting up there, and he was trying to hit a golf ball, and I wanted my hammer back because it was my hammer. And it was time to go home, and my uncle was there with me, and he was like, get the fucking hammer. I was like, all right, hey, Ernie, give me the hammer. He swung that one more time at that damn golf ball, and boom, hit me right in the forehead. I have a scar on my head to this day. I was just running it. All I remember was running in circles and, like, blood coming all over my face. Just, like, my hands, like, ah, shh. And I was a running in a circle whenever I was hurt person. That's what I would do. I would run in a circle when I was the most hurt. Yeah, but anyway, back to the story. After I got out of training school, oh yeah, I went to training school the last time I turned 18 in training school, and they kept trying to tell me to get my GED in training school. They're like, you're not gonna graduate when you get out. You're not even gonna go back to high school. You're gonna be 18. You're not gonna do what you say, and you're just gonna go back to work. I needed one unit. Like, it didn't have to be any unit. I went there and I asked I asked the principal what I needed. Now, oh, you just need weightlifting or whatever, just anything. And I was like, oh, okay. So I took my weightlifting class for a semester, and I graduated and I walked. So, like, those dudes are tripping, like, talking about getting a GED. I was like, I will get my diploma. I will walk, and I did. And it worked out just fine. I started working for my grandfather full time after graduating high school, but I didn't really want to do that. But I did anyway. Like, I just started working for him because he was like, you're going to come to work. And so that's just how that went down. And I started working for him full time. I ended up getting I was a full on union member at that point. I should have stayed in the union. I'd be retiring this year. I would. It'd be 20 years. I could retire right now. And have a check for walking out to the mailbox. Kids be making the wrong decisions. See, they tried to guide me right. But anyway, I worked for my grandfather till I was 22. After that, I was like an apprentice with my own apprentice, because you get. I've been working for him since I was 17 on the weekends and summers. I went into that in the older in the other stories, in the build up to this, but my grandfather took me under his wing. My uncle took me under his wing even further. and they basically taught me how to be a pretty good plumber. I had my own apprentice. I was running my own house whenever I quit. I don't really need to tell the stories, like kind of just some family stuff that like I had a truck that was passed down to me from my grandpa. It was the one he used to pick me up in. And so it's probably sentimental to him, but like I wanted a new truck. Like everybody's getting new trucks, and I was getting the hand-me-down fucking truck, and I didn't care for it. But really, I understood it. But it was old and it was raggedy and it broke down. And we had to fix it one day, and then he cussed me out about the car, the truck, and or being late and not being on the right route. I was going to get some breakfast. I don't give a fuck what he's talking about. I'm allowed to get breakfast on the way to work. And it just happened to be a different route than he was on, and then he didn't see me, but I fixed the truck without him. We didn't need his ass, me and my apprentice. This dude's huge, bro. He could lift anything. And he could move anything we needed, and we fixed it. He was strong as hell. He didn't have to, I think we didn't even need tools to fix it. Like, he just manhandled it, and we got back on the road. And he beat us there. He's like, "Why are y'all late?" And like, we had to fix the truck. It broke down. "Why didn't I see y'all on the side of the road?" I was like, "Well, we went over here and got some biscuits. We had to go get some biscuits. And now you're going to yell at us about getting some biscuits, huh?" And it ended up being a thing. I went to work the next day. I was like, "You're going to get me another truck." He's like, "You're going to drive that truck whether you like it or not." And we headed out. And I bailed. I fucking bailed after years and years of them fucking training me. My dumb ass is like, "Fuck all this shit over a goddamn truck." And mostly it was a lot of the yelling. It was all the time yelling. It was just nonstop. Like, that's how they communicated. Him, my uncle, everybody there. Like, it was just kind of the world of construction. Like, motherfuckers are rough. And they're just always yelling. And I was tired of their shit. I was tired of being their asshole. So I dipped in my 1972 Monte Carlo. I peeled out down the dirt road. Fucking slinging rocks and shit. I really did. That happened. And I did have a 72 Monte Carlo. That thing was badass. It cost me a couple grand, but it was badass. It was a cool car. After that, after the truck broke down, I quit there. I mean, I talked to my uncle, no problem. Me and my uncle were cool. But my grandpa, I was over it. My uncle would try to talk me into coming back and shit, but I was just like, "You know what? I'm done. Like, I just cannot do it." And then my grandma, she got pissed at me, and I don't know. They're all kind of upset about it. But I went and got a job fairly quickly. It was not a well-paying job though. I went and got a job at Funtime USA. I was like, "I'm gonna go kick it at the beach with my friend." And like, everybody knew a whole lot of people there because over time everybody had worked there, and anybody that worked there didn't make much money, so you had to figure out how to make some extra money. I wasn't really thinking that. I was just like, "I need a job. I don't want to do construction right now. It's summer, it's hot. Fuck construction work." So I went and got a job at Funtime USA. I didn't realize it was gonna be 7 days a week though. They wanted you there 7 days a week. I missed out on a whole summer of fun stuff, like just no days at the river, no nothing. But basically, you're just there starting go-karts and sending people around the track and just bullshitting with your buddy and sneaking off and smoking a joint here and there, going off to lunch with your girlfriend or whatever, go flirt with the girls over by the bumper boats or whatever. I don't know. It was pretty good times. But whenever I was getting gas one day, I was like, "Man, I don't really have that much money." I'm sitting there calculating the way I used to live with construction money to this. I'm like, "Man, this isn't worth 7 days a week." Like, it was hard work doing construction, but it's fuck, I could get money and I don't have to work as long to make the same kind of money. And I was like, sitting there thinking. And then as I'm getting gas, one of the old homies, old Muggsy, he pulls up and he tells me, "Oh, I got the plug," or whatever. And I go over there, spend that exact money that was in my pocket, like $200 on some weed on like a QP. And I flipped that day, and then the next day I went and got back. I went and got some more the next day. I went and got some more the next day. And it was going for like that for like a week because everybody at Funtime USA was smoking. Everybody, the owners were smoking, all kinds of stuff. Everybody's smoking. So from them and then all my friends and stuff, I think somebody got busted somebody got busted. I don't want to say their name, but somebody big got busted. And there's a vacuum pretty much, and I kind of just filled the void, I guess. And I came up, and then another thing that really helped at the go kart spot. I was like, hey, if you come buy a bag, I'll give you a free go kart ride. And that blew up. Like, it really blew up. It got out of control. And needless to say, without bragging anymore, money was good. And then I elevated from that Monte Carlo to an 84 Regal on triple gold D's. It was Bob Lane. He loved my car. He had built that car. I can't claim that I built it, but it was mine because I had the motherfucking title in my name for a good couple of years. But Bob, like, I had the job at Fun Time. Like, everybody just come to Fun Time. Like, it wasn't even like everybody's riding go-karts, but there wasn't much to do. But you could just stop by Fun Time, sit in the front, and, like, typically, like, the go-kart guys had to work, and they could just come back there and kick it back at there with us. But, like, those guys would go kick it in the front and just talk to random people, and then other people would pull up, and they'll just sit in the benches. They have, like, park benches. Like, I don't know, picnic benches. That's what I'm trying to say, picnic benches. Lined up like a whole line of them, random people just show up, locals kick it there for a little bit. They'll even have a cop there on the weekend because it was kind of, you know, it get rough sometimes, but basically everything was cool. Everybody's pretty chill. It was Fun Time USA. You come ride go karts, go play some mini golf. It's like boomers here in San Diego. But I don't know. I was moving way too much. It was like 10 pounds a week eventually. And it was all little bags. It was all little bags and it was all me. Well, I mean, not really all me, but it was all me there at that spot. Now, definitely was moving too much. And like, even the owner was in on it. Like, I had to start buying go-kart rides because I was giving so many go-kart rides out. And he's like, yeah, I see your tactic. It makes sense, but you essentially you're using my gas. You need to just buy some of the rides. I was like, okay, sounds good. Buy the rides. He wanted me to buy every ride, but you know, I weaseled around it a little bit because I was a little hustler, and he wasn't cutting in too much. Damn it, he was getting in the weed too. But Mondays were the best. They paid cash. The owner paid everybody cash, and then that dude essentially gave me a grip of money, and then everybody that owed me money hooked me up, and it was pretty good because he was always buying weed. He had a pretty good habit. All right, I had the weed plug. Oh, buy a bag, yeah. Buy a bag, ride a go-kart. Oh, yeah, there was undercover police, and then, like, I see it. Like, I feel it. I see it. Somebody's either snitching or they just know. Like, it's Mississippi. It's Gulfport, Mississippi. These, you know, they don't have much to do. And then eventually, you know, they find a whiff of something. Like, somebody snitched, someone gets busted with some weed, someone gets jealous or something. Who knows? All I know is I was moving way too much for a kid my age. I was like 22. I was probably living beyond my means a little bit too, working at Fun Time. I shouldn't be riding around on a car with gold Daytons on it. That's for sure. Because Bob Lane had built a badass car. Bob Lane wanted my car. I had a 72 Monte Carlo. He wanted my car. And he had built quite a few hydraulic lowriders. And then he also had like some muscle cars. Like, yeah. He was definitely a mechanics kid, and then like all my friends were mechanics too, and then a whole lot of them would have badass cars. Like Chris Kelly had the Cutlass, BJ he was more in the muscle stuff, so he had the Mustang, and he had a Camaro, he had both. Like he didn't give a fuck about what Ford, Chevy, none of that was a bother to him. And then Bob had he had a Monte Carlo that was a low rider. He had a big badass beast of a what the hell did he had a Camaro too. Yeah, he had a old IROC Z big body from the 80s or something like that. And BJ's from the 70s or something. But he had this, he had the illegal Regal. That's what we called it. It was a black 1984 Regal with chrome on the bottom, big chrome bumper in the front. Everything's in great shape. The interior is red. It's in great shape. It's got a good sound system, 4 6x9s up there because you can't put nothing in the trunk. It's got 8 switches. So it's got 4 solenoids and it's got 8 batteries and like 4 or 8 solenoids and 4 pumps. Yeah, 4 pumps and 8 solenoids and then shit, at least 4 big ass batteries. It might have been 8 batteries in there. All I know is the trunk had it had like a kill switch out the back of that bitch. I had if, once it one time it caught fire and I had to jump out the back and fucking light it break it down because some kids were asking me to jump it when I just put it in 3-wheel and then something fucking slipped up and oh yeah, the bracket broke. I had to get that rewelded. Anyway, he built that badass car. We traded cars in a bar one night. Now I got to ride around this badass car because he wanted to fix my car up and trade back. But that didn't end up happening. Unfortunately, Bob passed away. Rest in peace, Bob Lane. He was a great guy. He was a hustler. He pissed a lot of people off, but he was good to the people that were good to him. And I always remember him. And I always remember that car. I just wish I'd gotten my car back because he did turn that thing out. He made it a beast. He put a 467 Vortec in there, made changed the regular transmission, made it a ratchet shifter. The body was sturdy, like the he put new wheels on it, he put new struts on it. He changed everything on the bottom. He had a stepdad that had a shop. He could just lift the whole fucking thing. He had a couple badass fucking project cars. Like Bob Lane was doing it. He was doing the most when he was doing it. If Instagram and all that shit existed back then, all those dudes would have had, they'd have been blown up, bro. They'd have the fucking coolest cars on the internet. It was pretty cool to watch because they were like the older crew from us. And like we grew up and we had some cool cars and shit too. So like we held our own. We came up. We had some badass cars. But he did trade me down his. And that thing was, I was proud to have it. But back to Fun Time USA before the whole, well, before Bob died anyway, I was working at the Fun Time, right? That place right there eventually, like it's seasonal. That place is only open until September. And now I'm feeling the pressure from these, I got a whole lot of money now. Like I got a lot of money. I'm tired of re-ing up. It's getting dangerous. And I want to leave town. Like the job's about to be over. I want to leave town. And I'm thinking about it. I'm like half living with this girl, and half living at my homie BJ's house, and everything's kind of cool like that. And I forget her name. It doesn't matter. Like I went. Why would I? I don't need to tell her name. She's really cool. We're actually friends on Facebook still. But she wasn't happy whenever I was leaving. Like I come back one day and I'd already just decided it. I was like, I'm leaving. And she's like, what do you mean you're leaving? I was like, I'm leaving town. Like she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, I'm leaving the hell out of Mississippi. There ain't nothing you can say. Just believe me, I'm about to get arrested if I don't leave. She's like, you're crazy. You can't just leave. You can't just leave. Like, yeah, I was like, I'm leaving. I don't give a fuck what you say. I already got a girl coming to pick me up. She's a stripper. She's working tonight. I'm gonna have her take me to New Orleans. I probably shouldn't have told this girl she was a stripper. She's like, you having a stripper take you to New Orleans? Like, I am. I'm about to leave. I'm telling you the truth. But I'm going to the train station. I don't know where I'm going. Tell everybody I'm going to Jamaica. And she was tripping. She was not happy with me. She's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, there's a honk outside. I packed up one backpack, and my buddy met me there. I remember counting out like 6 grand from me, and I handed him like a QP and then a grip of money. Like I won't say how much, but it was a pretty good sum. And he's like, "What the fuck you want me to do with this?" I said, "Put it in your safe. I know you have a safe." And that girl was tripping. And I trusted him. I trusted that dude. I knew he wasn't going to fuck me over. And she was like, "Why don't you leave it here?" I was like, "I don't trust your ass. You'd get robbed any minute, like your roommate." "No, hell no." She's like, "You could leave it here. You should leave it here." I was like, "I'm not leaving that here." I'm like, "Bro, take that to your house." And she's like, "Well, give me some." I gave her $100 out of the $6,000 I'd pulled out. I was like, "That's going with him. Here's that." And she's like, "You should leave me some more money. I can't believe you have that much money." I was like, "Well, I mean, you don't need this money. This ain't your money." She was pissed. Needless to say, I mean, rightfully so. But rent at that time was like $100 a month. Like, to be fair, Mississippi rent was low. Her rent might have been $150 a month because she had a pretty nice place. But my place that I ended up getting whenever I came back was like $125 a month, and it was $250 a month because it was $150 for me, but it was a 2-bedroom. We were splitting it. Mississippi rent was cheap AF, so I wasn't tripping. She wasn't tripping. I bought all the food. It did not matter. She was tripping. She was mad about me leaving. Rightfully so, because I was definitely going for a minute. She's like, "How long are you going to be gone?" I was like, "I don't know. I'm thinking, like, I'm dipping. I don't know if when I'm coming back." But I was thinking maybe a couple months, 3 months. That's what I was thinking. I'm going to dip out until they forget my name. Like, I'm leaving. Like, if they don't catch me, eventually they'll forget about me. Like, what the fuck happened to him? And that was my plan in my crazy brain, my 22-year-old drug dealing friend brain. All I was selling was weed, though. I wasn't doing anything crazy. Now weed's legal. So I was just a businessman once again. That's all I was trying to do. But Michelle Glass, she's my friend still. She liked my post yesterday on Facebook, but she drove me to New Orleans. She was going to work that night. We were all young, and she was young. She was going to work at what was that place called? Temptations. It was a cool place to go. In fact, I took the Seedless Guys there eventually. But after I kicked it on, so she took me to New Orleans. She thought I was crazy, and I told her basically, you know, I'm gonna hop on the train. I'm going to go to Bourbon Street. I know the train leaves at midnight. I'm going to go to Bourbon Street for a little while, drink, hang out with some people, which I did. I went and met some people. I didn't really meet people. I didn't know any of the people that I drank with that night, but I did find a picture of them not too long ago whenever I was looking through a memory box, like an actual printed out picture. Who the hell has those anymore? But I got a memory box, and I just had to look through it for something, and I remember seeing them, but it was at a bar called the Alibi. There's another story about the Alibi later on, actually, but this was a good encounter at the Alibi. It was kind of one of the bars that, like, all the strippers would go to after, like, 4 a.m. It was always open, but that was, like, their bar. Like, that was one of the ones that Michelle and all those girls went down there, Rihanna, Kendall, all the bundle of them from Mississippi that went there to work. A lot of the girls that I went to high school with ended up going to stripping in Bourbon Street. Like the ones that partied, like the ones that had a good time, they went over there to make some money. And usually we benefited from it because they're our friends and they had money and they're like, you know, let's do this. And they're really cool, actually. All those girls treated us boys really cool because we were fucking rude to them growing up. So thanks, ladies. Y'all were really cool to us when y'all had all that money. Bourbon Street. Well, I probably had fun that night, but I don't think there's any crazy stories to tell. Essentially, I got down to the train, and then you start trickling onto the train, and like it's close to midnight. You're in New Orleans, so everybody's got some type of buzz going. They like nobody's leaving New Orleans sober on the train, and you can buy more booze. And, like, a lot of people were. They're, like, buckling down before the train bar closed and stuff. Because that dude don't stay open all night. Like, he'll stay open for a while, but he ain't going to stay open all night. But you can get some drinks on the train and get fucked up. And if you bring some on, like if you're sneaky about it, they don't care, but you just can't get shit faced. But basically, you're gonna meet the people you're sitting around. Like I like to say hi to people no matter what, and everybody's drunk's kind of friendly, so you say hi to people around you. I meet this one lady, she's going from New Orleans to Alaska. And then there's this one girl with her kid, they're going to I think Phoenix. They're asking me where I'm going. I'm like, I don't really know. I bought a ticket to LA. They're like, to LA, huh? I was like, yep, I'm just going to LA. I got no idea what I'm doing. I'm gonna drink all the way there. They're like, well, that sounds like a good plan. So we all, we got a good buzz going. And I don't know, we stayed up for a while. Like it's not like the train lights go out and you don't talk anymore. Like the train lights weren't really out either. Like it was on for a while. We were bullshitting, talking late in the evening, drinking, having a good time. And think it took a pretty good while to get through Texas, and like I think we ended up having like a stall or something like that. We had a pretty long day. And we didn't make it to Phoenix necessarily on time, but it ended up being the next day, and like we all really got to know each other the next day. Like train riding across America is pretty cool. Like you're gonna see more of America than you would if you're driving because it's different, and then you can ride in the like you've got two sides of the windows, you can see stuff. I don't know, it's just a little different. You're on a little different trek than if you were in the road, and you're also a little bit higher. So you get to see it, and then you get to meet new people. You just stand up and walk around, go talk to people, sit in the observing car, see just the scenery out in Texas. Just kind of, that's the desert, man. Like it's mad. It's a good thing I'm on this train. But you also got to think back to the guys that built those trains out, like the not necessarily that particular railroad, but like a railroad. Like the first railroad long time ago. I think that's amazing. It's crazy to me. Anyway, I enjoy that stuff though. So I was enjoying that ride for sure. And we're all getting to know each other. That lady from Alaska, she was a thug. She was gonna go out there and beat the shit out of some people. She had a bandana on. She's going like if somebody was fucking with her daughter, she's gonna go beat some dude up. She's like, I ain't having it. And I was like, good for you, man. And then the girl with the kid, she was a touchy feely one. It was another night before, and we kind of we had a little bit of fun whenever whenever the lights were out, pretty much the next night. And then she got off the next morning in Phoenix, and I never saw her again. She was offering me a ride to California. I was like, I think I'll just take the train. Thank you. All we did was like kissy face and stuff. But anyway, that's not anything to brag about. But it was something. It was kind of funny. It was crazy. It was random as shit. It was on a damn train. LA. I get to LA. I got no idea what to do. I'm like, where do I go now? I'm just a Mississippi boy. Mind you, I got a lot of money in my pocket. Like, I was just riding the train. I ain't telling anybody I got money in my pocket, but I do. I got plenty of money in my pocket. I'm like, what am I gonna do? I was like, let's go get a fucking hotel at the fucking beach. This Mississippi boy walking around downtown LA. I got nowhere to go, like, no idea where to go. I just walked toward a bus stop and I was like, hey, which bus takes me to Venice Beach? And because that's the one Baywatch or what. I don't know if it was really Venice Beach. It could have been a better one, Malibu, which is right next door. But anyway, I get to the beach. I'm walking up and down. I brought a jar of some BC bud that I had, and nobody in Mississippi would buy it. So like I just always end up being the one smoking it, which is fine by me, because it was just better off. And I thought I had really good weed. I'm walking down the beach. And I'm like, what am I gonna do? I said, well, first, Frankie, you should probably have a bowl on the West Coast beach. So I went and had myself a celebratory bowl on the beach, like, little man, you made it. You quit plumbing. You fucking started a dumbass job that was a little bit below your standard. But you turned around and made a fucking grip of money at that motherfucking job. And here you are sitting in Venice Beach. And I think I might all walked all the way up to Santa Monica by this point and smoking a bowl. And then I stood up and I'm walking down. I'm wearing, mind you, I look like a tourist. I got my shoes. I just smoked my bowl and I got my shoes off. But I'm holding on to them. I got my socks and my shoes, and I got a backpack on. Haven't gotten the hotel room yet. And I'm a friendly person. I see like three girls kind of laughing at me because I look like a tourist. Like on the beach, they're all just sitting on towels, bullshitting. And I walk over and I say, "What's up?" And they turn out, "Well, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm from Mississippi. I have no idea what I'm doing." And we end up smoking some weed, and then they tell me about a party in Malibu or Santa Monica or somewhere. I don't remember. I didn't go because it seemed like a little too much. Like, I was a little intimidated. I was like, I'm not ready for no goddamn Malibu party. I got too much money in my pocket. Just leaving a dumbass. In fact, I was planning on going when they were telling me. I'm like, hell yeah. Hell yeah, we're doing this. I'm doing this. And then it just, I don't know, I got weirded out. After I left them, I went and got a hotel right there on the beach. And but there's bums everywhere. I remember just like kind of like, okay, this is nice area. And like now I know, and it's even worse now. But back then I was like, oh, okay, we got bums around here. I was being a little judgmental, but now I know that's just normal. But now it's just worse. Like, it's not even funny. But it's all right. I mean, people are going to do what they're going to do. They're going to live where they're going to live. And if there's a spot for them, you know, so be it. Live there. But I floated around L.A. for like 3 days, just bouncing around hotels. Or not really hotels, bars. Just like daytime I'd go buy some dumb T-shirts. And then I'd float around eating food, meeting people, random people, talking to random people. And I think my favorite person ended up being this girl from London. And she was just rad. Like, she had an accent. We were running around. She was showing me all these things. And she would tell me about, you know, different shit I didn't know nothing about. And then one day I woke up and I was like, oh, shit. Brandon Pelez. I remember I graduated high school with this guy, and he had come down to Mississippi from San Diego, California, and he was a pretty cool guy. And I remember he had moved back to San Diego, and I looked at my phone, and sure enough, I had his cell phone number, and I was like, oh, man, this is crazy. So I called him. He answered. He's like, who's this? And I was like, it's Frankie. He said, what's up, man? I haven't talked to you in a while. I was like, well, I'm in L.A. He's like, what are you doing in L.A.? I was like, well, I'm up here, and I want to come down there. He's like, well, you come on down. So I went on down. And once I got to L.A., he met me at the train station downtown San Diego, and we either took a trolley or a bus around, but I think we took a trolley to Old Town, took a bus to OB or something. I don't remember exactly how it went down, but he basically lives in Point Loma, and he lived on a boat. Like, we actually had to row out to his boat. Like, you go to the dock where he works. He said he worked at a boat gas pump station. Like, that's all they did was pump gas in it. Well, I mean, they check the oil and stuff. Like, some of those boats are, like, legit, you know, big engines. They go in there and check the oil and stuff, do regular maintenance on some of the boats. And that was his gig. I think he still does that to this day. He's, like, the boss now. Instead of the regular guy, but he doesn't live on a boat anymore. But he did. Whenever I came down here, at first he lived on a boat for quite a while. And I visited him, and I stayed here for like 3 weeks on that boat. And I loved it because I was running from the law. In my mind, this is like the safest place for me. I was like, man, I'd wake up in the morning. I ain't got nobody around me. And I'm telling you, I was paranoid. I was so paranoid whenever I was in Mississippi. That chick had no idea how paranoid when I wake up. I had a lot of money. People down to rob you in Mississippi. People down to beat you up, kill you. Don't care. Like, they don't care. And they'll wrap you up, tie you up, beat you the fuck up over some money. over some real ass money, they will fuck you up. And I was a nervous wreck. And then also the police. Like, the police is one thing, but there's other people that knew I had a lot of money, and I didn't like any of it. I didn't like the fact that they had that knowledge at all. And more people were talking. So I had to go. And now I'm down in San Diego. I'm floating around. I don't really know where to start, where, how. Like, I don't know. I got here to San Diego. That we're rowing out to the boat. That's pretty cool. We're rowing back to land. We're meeting up with Sluggo, and Sluggo was Brandon's best friend, and he always listened like underground rap and stuff. Like, I forget what they're called, man. Sage Francis and like Atmosphere and all those things, like Eminem and Ciphers and all these random things that I didn't know anything about. I'm like, what is this shit? I'm listening to like 50 Cent and Nappy Roots. What are y'all listening to? But anyway, they're into that. And like, they taught me a lot of stuff about that. And then we go over to the homie Rezwan's house. And basically, he'd do reggae. I'd show up over there and he's DJing reggae in his living room or in his bedroom, wherever the fuck he was. He had some reggae going. And I guess he taught me a lot about reggae too. He introduced me to a lot about reggae. I'm gonna do one of these podcasts. The next one probably is gonna be about just like kind of life with Seedless, because life with Seedless is badass. Like, I had so many cool things. So we won't go into that. But Seedless Clothing Company at this time was badass. But we would go to Rezwan's house, and like, this is where my weed finally got shunned. Like, I thought I had some good weed, but this dude had some bomb, crazy, stinky weed that I ended up having to buy some. I was like, hell yeah, let me get some of that. He's like, oh, I got you. No problem. And then, I don't know, about 3 weeks. Well, during the 3 weeks, I stopped by Seedless Clothing. I bought a bunch of clothes just for me. They're like, oh yeah, just come by. We'll give you regular price, wholesale price. I was like, all right, that's cool. This works out. And I went there and I bought probably like $300, $400 worth of clothes. And then, I mean, how much more you need? They had stash pockets and stuff. I was like, hell yeah, let me get these pants right here. They got stash pockets. How many pants you got? They got stash pockets. Oh, let me get all of them. You got hoodies? You got hoodies? And there was this one hoodie that I wanted. They didn't give it to me. They didn't have it. It wasn't printed yet. I wanted it, and I said I wanted it, and they ended up getting it to me. And that's a whole nother story, all in and of itself. Okay, so after I'm in San Diego for a while, I've had some reggae shows and did some hanging out on a boat, going to Ocean Beach, going to Pacific Beach. I remember Sluggo telling me, you know why they call it PB? While the pretty bitches are. That shit was kind of funny. I had a little giggle. I had some cool sunglasses. I ended up losing some o that I overpaid over too way too much for, pretty much. Overpriced. But it is what it is. You're gonna do some dumb shit. But once I get to a point, oh yeah, I get a phone call randomly. I'm on the boat just chilling, and I get a phone call from old Penelope, old Penny. She got mad when I called her Nickel. I remember old Penny. Penny calls me and she's in Oregon. And she's like, what are you doing? I was like, fuck, I don't know, man. It's kind of floating around San Diego. She's like, San Diego? I'm in Oregon. Come up here. I was like, you know what? I can do that. Why not? You know, let's keep this moving. I haven't spent my money at all. At that point, I think we went snowboarding once, but that was probably the most expensive thing I had done, really. We went downtown for something, but that was not much. I'm living out of a backpack. I'm not doing downtown things that matter. But what I did do was go hop on a train. I went to downtown San Diego again to get on the train. But I was kind of lost, and this one girl asked me what time it was. I told her what time it was. McLovin reference. But she legit wanted to know what time it was, and I legit needed to know where to buy my ticket. And she helped me. She pointed directions. She walked with me. We were, I don't know, just bullshitting while I was in line, and I got the ticket. We went to the train, sat down in our seats, which there was no assigned seating or anything like that. You sit wherever you want. So we were chilling together, and we were both going north. I thought I was going to Oregon, and we were sitting there talking. And I'd already bought these tickets, and the train was rolling. I'm looking at these tickets, and I'm kind of confused. I'm like, I asked her, I'm like, does this look like I'm staying the night in LA? And she's like, oh my God, you are staying the night in LA. Did you know this? I was like, I had no idea. I was just buying it. She's like, I don't know, maybe there's not another train going to that place. Until then, I was like, man, what the fuck is this shit? She was like, it was a different like one to go to LA. And I guess I got the wrong one. But essentially, I got to LA and she was like, well, you come kick it. You're like, whatever. Like, I live in Hollywood. You should come kick it with me. Like, just come kick it. Like, honestly, like, we talked the whole time. Like, we were pretty chill. Everything was chill all the way up there. So, nobody's stressing about nothing. We get to her house. Oh, shit. On the way to her apartment, which was nice, but on the way there, we're walking down Sunset Boulevard and this goddamn bird fucking flew into some window, like a storefront window, just whop, we're right in front of us. I remember this. It's like a kind of a little flashback. But I don't know. We get to her apartment, and she's like wanted to show me, like for sure, we got something to drink. But then she showed me her rooftop, and like you can see the Hollywood sign, and that was really cool to me. I was like, oh man, I've never seen this. Like, boom, there's the Hollywood sign. Like, you live here? Like, this is amazing. And then we embraced, and we had a movie moment, like a movie kiss moment, and it was cool. And then life is good. And then, that's enough of that story. But after that, we went out down through Hollywood and all that stuff. And then we went to I got to be in the Jimmy Kimmel show, like on lot, like in the audience. I was in the audience, Jimmy Kimmel Live. I was walking around. I did a bunch of touristy things. I did a whole bunch of touristy things. And then the next morning, I went and got on I got on the train. I went up to Oregon. And on the way to Oregon, though, I kind of got a hangover. I woke up really early. And this group of guys, like, I went to the caboose of the train. I went to the caboose of the train. And I'm like, trying to avoid people, pretty much. I'd already had a good night. Life is good. Amtrak has been good to me. Ramtrak has been good to me. And these guys are loud as shit. And they just come barreling into this place. And they're all over this damn train, talking to me, trying to give me booze. And I'm like, I'm not ready for that. Leave me the fuck alone. And they're cool enough, I guess, but they're shit-faced from the night before. And then they continue drinking their own booze. And they weren't buying the train's booze. So eventually, the train conductor, Frank, comes back there. And he's like, hey, I see y'all are faded. I know that y'all are not buying from us. Y'all are coming and buying sodas. And y'all are just getting drunker. Y'all can drink here. But you're supposed to drink our booze. And they're, all right. But they did not follow suit. But we get to Santa Barbara, and I'm of the male species, and there's no avoiding seeing this woman that's waiting to get on the train right outside of our train, like our actual car. And like those dudes are drunk now. Oh shit, bro! And they have their moment, but before they take off, you can get off and smoke a cigarette real quick, and that's what I did. I got off, smoked a cigarette, and then whenever I came back, that girl was sitting with them, and she was down. She was like, "Fuck yeah, let's party." She's I don't know, she's wearing like big sunglasses and like a Von Dutch hat, one of those Von Dutch hats. Von Dutch hats. I don't know if you know them. They were all the rage. Every girl had one. They were super cool. Super cool. I mean, just they had They were beyond bedazzled, bro. They had embellishments, embroideries, appliques, all kinds of fancy stuff. And then she had the big Von Zipper glasses, sunglasses on. Just the biggest titties too, just ridiculous. Just she was a little shit show herself, and she was partying with these dudes. And they're all getting louder and louder. I went back to my spot. I was sitting there. I was not partying with them. Chilling. I was in chill mode. I sneaked a bowl too while I was out there. So I was chilling. I had some Rezwan's good, good. And I was sitting there chilling, minding my business. And then Frank, the conductor, comes back there again. And he's like, "All right, I'm breaking this up." He splits them all up. And like the girl's confused, like, "What do you mean?" But and like the guys are like, "Hey, man, we're having fun here. What the fuck?" And they're like, "I'll kick all y'all off the train." The girl's like, I'm not getting kicked off the train over these guys. I got to get up to Seattle." She's like, "He's like, ma'am, if I know you're not with them, these guys have already been warned." He broke it down to her, and she was like, "Well, I'm dipping from these guys." She sees me back there. She comes, plops right next to me, and I'm like, "Hi." She's like, "Hey, why aren't you kicking with us?" I was like, "See that? They're getting fucking kicked off the train, pretty much. They've been like that the whole time." And we ended up making friends. And then she's asking me what's up with me. And I was like, "Well, I'm just smoking my bowl right now. I got fucked up last night." And then we went down to the bathroom for, cause I told her like, you could go to the bathroom, smoke a bowl, and then like blow or like hit the flush. Like as long as you hit a small bowl, you can hit flush and like nobody's really going to know. And you know, if you got some smell good, some cologne or whatever, you spray that before you leave. So we did that. And then we went back to the seats and, we were chilling. Those guys come sniffing around, bullshitting. She was like, "Hey, let's go to another car." So we went to a whole different spot. Like we grabbed our luggage and everything, made it obvious like we didn't want to kick it with them. And it's kind of cold-blooded move, but it worked. And then we went and kicked it all day. And then we watched a movie at night or whatever. And I guess for the sake of the Ramtrak story, there was some hanky panky because Ramtrak is pretty good. Like you get fucked up on these train rides, and like you go to these like the handicap size, like mom size. I got a baby size fucking bathrooms on there. You got some space. Tell you what, and life is good. That's all I need to say about that. Don't need to go too much into that, but life was good. Those guys were jealous as fuck. The eyes were heated on me, I could tell. But by midnight, I think I was already there. Like I'd gotten to Oregon, and then I got off the train and then met up with old Penelope, a good friend of mine, ex-girlfriend sometimes, but typically we're just friends. But it's one of those friend girls that you like them, but she wants to put you in the friend zone, gives you some play here and there because she's a good friend, and then you fall in love with her, and it's not her fault. She's trying to hook you up with a little bit of play, and you caught the feels, and that's kind of where I was with her. And I don't know, this time we went up there and we're kicking it. We had a good time. I don't think we even hooked up, to be honest. We just started fighting. Like, we just started fighting because he's, like, being super snobby about something. And I was like, "Take me back to the fucking train station right in the fucking morning. Like, ASAP. In the morning. Like, so I was staying at her mom's house. And she was, like, laying down all these rules and stuff. And I'm like, "Why don't I just get a hotel then? Like, it's all good." She said, "No, just stay the night. I'm like, "I don't really want to. Like, I want to get the hell out of here." And this is not the first time me and Penny fought over something like that. So I was like, "Just take me to the damn train station. And I'm going to New Orleans. I'm going home. I've been on the road for a long time. Maybe I'm cranky. And get the fuck out of here." And next morning we woke up early. She took me to the train station. And we kind of apologized to each other and just like, we didn't want to be mad at each other or nothing like that. So I dipped from there. And I'm just waiting for the train. Train comes. I get on the train. And I think the train took a while. It wasn't like it was in the morning. It was like in the afternoon. She dropped me off, and then I just had to wait for my train pretty much. And she dropped me off, and I waited for my train, and I got on. I think it's starting to be dark. I get on this train, and whenever I get on there, I see Susie. I'm talking about, I'm barely walking through the train with my luggage. I see Susie, and that's the girl from Santa Barbara with the Von Dutch hat and the sunglasses. She went up to Seattle and kind of, now she's on the train already. I'm like, she's sleeping. I tap her on the shoulder. The girl next to her looks at me, excuse me. I'm like, oh, hi, this is Susie right here. Tell her Frank's on the train. She'll know who I'm talking. She'll know who it is. I go find me a seat, kind of maybe like two cars back, and then it wasn't long before I saw Susie come running through there, and like we saw each other again. We were kind of happy with that. It was kind of crazy, because I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? So what the fuck are you doing? I was like, I got in a fight with my friend, and she's like, I got in a fight with my sister. And I was like, get me the hell out of here. I'm leaving. And I got on the train. I was like, that's pretty much exactly what happened with me. And we had a good laugh about that. But this time, instead of, hooking up on a train, she's all smart. She said, hey, why don't you jump off the train and I'll drive you in Santa Barbara and I'll just drive you the rest of the way in the morning. I mean, I couldn't argue with that logic. Looking her eye to eye. I swear I was looking eye to eye. Looking eye to eye, I couldn't deny that proposition. I was like, all right, let's go kick it in Santa Barbara. Mind you, I'm 22. I might be 21 at this time. I'm like 21, and I was riding around on a train having adventures. Don't judge me. This is Ramtrack. This is the Ramtrack episode, so don't judge me. This is an epic story amongst the guys whenever telling it with guys. The girls out there probably won't like this story so much. But the guys appreciate this story for a guy just rolling around America, fuck going to Europe and doing a fucking train trip around fucking Europe. People don't like you. I took a train trip around America and people liked me. Santa Barbara was really cool. We went and had a blast, like bouncing around their party scene. Had a blast. And then true to her word, the next day she drove me to LA. I have a cell phone and I'm slick with it. And the whole time I'm texting the girl that I met from LA, and I had her drop me off right in front of that girl's house. And she saw that girl drop me off. She's like, who the hell is that? And I explained the whole damn story to her. She's like, that's fucking crazy. And she was happy to see me again, but this time she like had her friend take us all over LA that night, because I was only going to stay for one more night, because I legit had been spending money, and like I was seeing the end of it, and I wanted to start making my trek home. And we went and had some good times that night, and maybe one, yeah, I probably stayed 2 nights. I stayed the next day too, and then the following morning I was like, all right, that's the one. That's the one I'm gonna do. But we went, we just bounced around doing more touristy stuff and just eating good food. I didn't see any crazy celebrities, no stories like that. Not on this trip really. Except for the people I saw on like the Jimmy Kimmel Live show, I guess. Like that's what you're supposed to see. Now, I guess basically, like I'm going to the train station. I'm gonna go to New Orleans. I got like this girl from LA. She gave me like a backpack because I had so much shit. She gave me a backpack, so now I have two backpacks, and I got not a lot of money. I'm like, all right, let me just go get this train ticket to New Orleans. And I know if I get to New Orleans, I'll be good. I was gonna talk to Michelle. I'm talking about after I bought the train ticket, I had like $60. I went and spent a lot of money. Like it was 2, 3 months of good times, like, 'cause I wasn't holding back. I was buying good shit. I was buying things that I wanted from out here. I was buying all kinds of weeds too. But I was mostly spent. I spent snowboard. That would cost some money, but I don't know. Just bar nights out and about and buying cool stuff. Like I bought some cool scales and things. It's all kinds of random things that I liked.
I don't know, but I spent some money on the hotels and things too, but it ended up dwindling down. And it goes quick. It goes quick. Like you can spend a couple grand quick in Cali, no fucking problem. And so six didn't go very far. It didn't go very far. But to be fair, I was gone like 2 months, and I was having a blast, and it was well spent money. But I had like $60, pretty much, and I spent it well on the train ride back home.